Our thanks to Linode for sponsoring this episode of Does Not Compute. Linode is one of the fastest, easiest ways to create and manage your own virtual private servers. They've got 8 data centers around the world to help you get your data close to your users. No matter which location you choose, every Linode server has native SSD storage and Intel E5 processors and runs over a 40 gigabit network. Linode also has amazing pricing, with their 1 gigabyte servers starting at only $5 per month and high memory plans starting at $60 a month for 16 gigabytes. All servers are billed hourly with monthly caps. Linode also has some great add-on services to help you manage your servers once they are set up, including automated server backups, node balancers to help you scale, and Longview, which gives you easy access to detailed system metrics. To learn more, make sure to visit linode.com/doesnotcompute. When you sign up at that URL using the promo code doesnotcompute2017, they'll give you $20 in account credit to get started. Check out linode.com/doesnotcompute today.
I wrote a little bit of Go, too, yesterday.
What'd you write Go for?
We can talk about that.
Just for fun?
It's curious.
Yeah.
The numbers are nagging at me.
Oh, wait. Go to talk to the DK database as well?
I didn't do that. I didn't get that far.
Gotcha.
I did some reading and I did some writing to look at the language. So that's what I've been doing. Just agonizing over the numbers, Paul. The numbers.
Yeah, man.
The numbers in the database. That's what I was talking to you about yesterday. When I was saying that, just kind of looking around, observing different, you know, so you look at different things like New Relic or what's the one that I'm trying out? Skylight? I think it was called Skylight?
Skylight. You did mention Skylight, yeah.
And Scout and all that. So what's cool is that, you know, as you're looking at the graphs, these performance monitoring applications, a lot of them will show an icon like, hey, you have an N+1, or hey, you have a large number of allocations to memory here. And so then they'll link to like help articles, like how do you fix this problem? And it just dawned on me yesterday, the more I read through stuff like this, really they're just SQL 101 articles.
It's kind of amazing. Almost all of the SQL, like, here's how to performance tune your database. Almost every single article I've read like that ever is like, add an index.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. or like optimize this query slightly. You're doing an N+1 or something. And it's amazing. Like, every single app still has these problems.
Yeah. They're the most common problems, because tools like Active Record make it so easy to not have to learn. Well, in a manner of speaking, they make it easy to not have to learn that sort of stuff to be productive out of the gate. And so people will just rely on Active Record methods that try to optimize things for you. But really, unless you know how it's coming out the other side, you're going to run into performance problems. It's just going to happen. And not only that, but you're going to not really know how to fix them, right? So You can learn via these other tools like New Relic or Skylight or Scout. You can learn where the problems are, but that doesn't mean that you know exactly how to fix it unless you actually learn the SQL underneath. And so I'm a pretty big fan right now of running or Active Record's explain. I think it's part of Active Record, right? The explain method, where you can type out like model.where, whatever. You can build your SQL query. And then you just type .explain and it'll actually break it out into how the SQL is run. But I think it also breaks it out to like a little flow. So it'll tell you like how many times it has to loop through records and things like that. So you can get kind of an idea of how many objects might be allocated to memory. Obviously, the deeper the stack goes, the more is getting stuffed into memory, which is where memory problems, memory leaks come from. But yeah, it just all comes down to SQL 101 kind of stuff, which, you know, I've studied it a little bit before, and so I have a good idea of what I'm doing. But like we're saying, these ORMs, these tools make it so easy to not even think about that you kind of start shooting yourself in the foot down the road.
Right. And I mean, with Active Record in particular, I don't have a ton of experience with a lot of other ORMs, but Active Record generally is pretty smart about how it actually assembles your queries. And with stuff like the explain, that makes it really easy to, if you're doing a more complex sort of query that with a lot of joins or something, it makes it really easy to visually see exactly what's happening behind the scenes. And I love using explain, especially for more complex stuff or stuff where I'm like, can I optimize this in some way? Super useful tool. But even though it does generate pretty okay SQL in most cases, the fact of the matter is it can't fix problems with your underlying data model. Like if you've organized things in a really inefficient way that's always going to require a ton of joins for every single query, or you just have no indexes for, indices for things that that you're going to be querying against a lot, Active Record can't do anything about that. So having that underlying knowledge is really important. At the same time, kind of the beauty of the whole thing is that you don't really need to know all these things up front in order to make something that actually functions. And I mean, I think personally that it's kind of great that these tools exist and that the solutions in a lot of cases are very simple.
Yeah, it's kind of akin to like, you know, when I was first learning JavaScript, using jQuery plugins instead of knowing how to write my own JavaScript, I just didn't know how to. So I would use jQuery and I would be productive that way. And then obviously you run into problems. You have your jQuery soup sites and you have, you know, conflicts with plugins and all that stuff. It's just a similar idea. You know, it's always good to have a general understanding of what you're using. So if you're using a library that is kind of wrapping something for you, it's always good to understand, you know, the work that you're trying to abstract away. And that's kind of where I'm doing the work now. And what's cool about, you know, jumping into Phoenix and Elixir and all that stuff is the Ecto library. It's not so much like Active Record at all. But when you're building your queries, it actually looks more like SQL. So you could have a model called posts and you could do 4P and posts. And then you would, below that, you would start structuring. So you could do, you could start like, you know, grabbing out whatever attributes you need, and then you can sort them and then you spin them out the bottom. So when you look at it, it looks kind of like a pseudo SQL, which is kind of, it's been educational for me, which is cool. It is a little bit more work than it feels than Active Record, but I don't know. I guess I'm like starting to realize pretty much anything that I do server side, it all comes back to SQL. Like all the performance stuff comes back to SQL. Obviously there's things you can do with Ruby that are bad, you know, like having lots of nested loops are obviously going to add lots of stuff into memory, but it just seems like majority, like 80, 85, 90% of performance issues come back to SQL for me.
Yeah, a lot of them. Although, on the other hand, you were sending me some performance numbers yesterday, or the other day.
Oh, yeah.
That were kind of bumming me out a little bit. What you were working in, you set up a test app in Phoenix, right?
Uh-huh, yep.
That was talking to the Design Collective database, and you were saying it was like an order of magnitude faster to load, or several orders of magnitude, to just render out stuff from the database.
32 times faster. I did the math this morning because I've been laying in bed thinking about it last night after I sent it to you. I was agonizing. And I'll preface this by saying I still do enjoy Rails and I think Rails is great. So I'm just kind of working on some performance stuff, you know, because the MVP was built without performance in mind. It was built like we have a tight deadline and it needs to be put together. It needs to work. And so now part of my job is we're launching very soon and it needs to perform well. And so I'm going to tighten some of this stuff up. Also, we're having more users. We're having more beta stores. We have like 25 or 30 stores on the platform now. And so now we have, you know, 10, 15 people on at a time that aren't just doing read-only stuff. They're doing heavy CRUD. They're creating products, updating products, reordering things, you know. So the tires are getting kicked pretty well. And I'm just going around trying to find performance stuff. So last night, I was feeling kind of down on myself because it was a Saturday night and I'm like, I'm working on code stuff. So what I did was
things to do on Saturday nights?
Well, I had just read a tweet that said,
nights is checking Twitter, number one.
Checking Twitter where there's a tweet that was saying, don't applaud your coworkers for working late on nights and weekends, basically was what the tweet was. And then I was kind of like, oh man, that's what I'm doing. What I did was I spun up a Phoenix app. I connected it, you know, the database credentials. I just connected it to my dev TK database. The only thing I had to change was, by default, the timestamp values for Phoenix or Ecto rather are, instead of created at, it's inserted at. And so I just had to change one config spot and it was good. I could just start querying the data. So I spun up a product and a store resource, and this is where it gets crazy. So on the Rails side of things, I'm using, everything's paginated. That's one way, that's like an easy win for performance problems, is just to paginate stuff. So the API endpoint, if you hit just slash products, you're going to get the first 50 products. And that was taking, I could probably find where I sent it to you because we didn't talk that much this morning. Yeah, so it was taking me between anywhere between 250 to 500 milliseconds to render the JSON for 50 products. And granted, that JSON also has like, you know, store ID, like, so each product has an identifying object for the store it belongs to, like store ID and store name. And there's some related data there, but generally the responses were between 250 to 500 milliseconds. And so in my Phoenix app, I set up a product resource that just had the default, you know, column names in it, in my Ecto schema. And I did a hit on just slash products, and it loaded 1690, I believe. 690 products was a response, and it did it in 70 milliseconds, including piping the JSON to the browser, which is crazy. Considering that there's no pagination, considering that, you know, the related data was still there. I have a hard time just, I looked at the numbers and I was like, how?
Did you run any analytics or any sort of anything to see where that time was being spent in Ruby? Or is that not something you've gotten to yet?
It's mostly all being spent in serialization.
Interesting. Okay.
Active model serializers and also a JR resource. I tried both. And most of it is, so there's a good portion of it gets the data, and then it has to loop over all the data and serialize it, put it together into objects, and then send it out. But I'm pretty sure, if I remember right, that most of it was spent in serializing.
So is your Phoenix demo serializing in the same way? Does it have the same schema output, basically, is what I'm asking?
Yes, yes.
Interesting.
So another example is if I went to, for, I also made a store endpoint, and in the responses, a store, I just made so that the store just includes an array of all its products. And some of the stores have many hundreds of products in my development database. And I hit that with the Phoenix endpoint, and it rendered just as fast, which is crazy because it rendered like 45 stores and all 1600 products in under. So I looked at the, I'm using PAW to do this. And so the response time in PAW from Phoenix was 150 milliseconds for all that, basically everything in the database. And I looked at the server log, and the server finished what it needed to do in about 70 milliseconds. So it seems like the rest of that time was spent in pushing the JSON to the client, you know, until the client's like, hey, I'm done. I have everything I need, right? But still, that's pretty wild. And so how it's being serialized in Phoenix is I just have a couple of different views. I have a product view and I have a store view. And after the controller action runs, it renders the view, and the view is just a map, a key value map of, you know, and then basically gets turned into JSON. So as I'm not using like an external library for serializing or anything like that, it's just basically taking a map, turning it into JSON, and sending it over.
Sure, that makes sense.
But still, yeah. I ran the first test, and I was like, "What in the world?" And so I kept doing it, and the results were consistent. Phoenix was generally between 70 to 100 milliseconds for anything, and that's no pagination. That's all 1600 plus 45 stores. It's just crazy.
Very impressive stuff.
Yeah, so I was just kind of like stewing in my chair last night. I was like, I'm pretty familiar with Phoenix now. I just basically had to stop myself from doing it. I felt like that moment creeping up in the back of my mind, like, if we're launching in 4 days, can it be done?
Let me just switch out the entire back end. No, not gonna happen.
No. And I mean, obviously, yeah, that would be. It would be difficult. It wouldn't be as bad as starting something from scratch because you have all of the business logic. You have like the requirements there.
Yeah, it's really just a translation job.
Yeah, it's not. And it's not a one-to-one translation from Rails to Phoenix at all. So, but I had to stop myself because I felt it creeping up. I looked at the clock and I was like, it's 10 o'clock.
Yep.
It's 10 o'clock and yep. I have it until next week. And
I would love, I'm sort of in a similar boat. I would love to like pick up Phoenix and learn it. And re-implement the Nest Nuts back end in it, but that's just not going to happen. There's too much to do, and there's too much. Like, I'm sure I could get a basic thing working in a day, right? That's kind of this is the big. I don't want to say the lie of Phoenix, but this is kind of the issue that I see is that it's really easy to get something up and running like what you've done and have a thing where it's like, oh wow, this is awesome and so performant. But the fact of the matter is there are so many things that just aren't being taken into consideration there. There's all sorts of things around saving data and user sessions and just stuff that I at least don't know right now. And so it's so easy with new technology like this to trick yourself into thinking, oh, it's going to be a weekend project to just switch this over. When in reality, that's just almost never the case.
It's absolutely not the case at all. And so that's one thing that I tend to do is I tend to make a list and I look at the list and I was like, can I do all of these things? If I can't, then I'm not going to try to make a production app with it, you know, for something that I'm being paid for anyway. And there's certainly some things that I don't know how to do yet with Phoenix and there's a time and place for it, you know? And, you know, part of what makes Rails great is that you can build things very quickly and you can get to your time from start to market is very short because of the developer conveniences it gives you. And I think there's a time and place for looking at, do we need to re-architect the entire thing to make it faster? And the answer mostly is no, because you don't have any users and you most probably don't have any revenue. So what's the point in wasting that time when you could be doing something more productive or something more useful for your users, which could potentially give you more revenue, right? And then once you have that stuff down the road, you could totally, like, think about all the, like, Twitter, for example, you know, it was Rails for so long and then they hit a point where they're like, all right, well, we've kind of like reached the limits with what we can do with what we have. We got to start thinking about another solution. But when they got to that point, they had how many developers? They had how many people willing to, like, put the work in to do something like that?
Sure. And I mean, I actually have mixed feelings on Twitter's switch away from Rails because I really wish that what they had done is more like what Facebook did, where they looked at the language that they were using, PHP in Facebook's case, and they're like, okay, this isn't serving our needs in the following ways. How can we improve the language? We actually have the person power at this point to improve this language or this framework or this whatever we're using, whatever the bottleneck is, to the point where it is usable for us and we don't have to switch over our entire code base. We've just made a better thing. And that's what they did with, what do they call it now? Hip-hop VM or something like that.
Yeah.
They actually went in and entirely created a thing that solved their problems instead of switching languages, which I think is if you have the firepower to do that, I think that's an amazing approach to take. Because then everybody benefits.
I totally agree. And I mean, think about, like, you think about Facebook, you think about Slack. Those are two huge examples of just massive companies that are running on PHP and they're fine with it. They're like, this is doing what we need. This is great. I think GitHub is another good example because obviously they're pretty famously a Rails shop. And they haven't, I think it'd be kind of impossible. I won't say impossible, but that'd be a huge order to try to redo something like GitHub.
Yeah, I mean, they were even on, GitHub was on Rails 2 for the longest time until not all that long ago. I don't know what they're on now, but that must have been a big, big, big project.
Yeah, yeah. But the point is that it can be done. You know, there's people that are running Rails in production that are serving a massive amount of traffic and it's fine. It works fine. So yeah, it's just one of those things where kind of have to like rein in my personal curiosity on things like, oh, I really like this different ecosystem. Let me just start building everything, like redoing everything I'm doing now in that new ecosystem, which is just not a good idea. It's not, you know, it's not going to be productive for the projects that I have already started. But yeah, I definitely had to stop myself last night when I was thinking about it.
Sure.
You know, so I'm sure, like, I think that it's a really good way to learn things, you know, working with something you're already familiar with. So if I have the dev data already, I might as well poke around with Phoenix and I might as well, you know, scaffold out some models. And that's a great way to learn Ecto, for example, right? I think one of the hardest things about learning something is trying to figure out, like, how, you know, what can I build to learn this thing? But if you have a project that you're already working on, it makes sense to use the data that you have because you're familiar with the problem that needs to be solved and you're familiar with how you solved it already. So in Ecto's case, if I'm not super familiar with Ecto, I know, for example, what my bosses want, like different like roll-up emails that we might get, or like different screens that we have where I'm having to do some SQL work to get the data. That's a perfect use case to recreate it in something new. And basically your problem is already defined, you know, and you know what the answer should be. So then you're basically just taking all of the extra guesswork out of learning something like Ecto and replacing it with really just learning the syntax.
Right. I think really this whole conversation kind of highlights one of the really big advantages of all this decoupling and API only and client side only stuff that we've both been talking about so much lately, where if you have your front end decoupled from your back end, then it actually becomes significantly, significantly more feasible to do something like switch your back end, because the front end doesn't need to care. As long as the responses are the same, that's fine. You can switch it out whenever you want, as many times as you want. And that is just not something that can be easily done if you have your front end tightly coupled with your back end. Like if you had your front end Rails and you wanted to switch over to Phoenix, that's a significantly, significantly bigger ask than if you just have a single page app and want to do that same kind of switch over.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, again, one of my biggest reasons for working so much on the side. And so actually, Friday, so the new front end I have been working on for DK, on Friday I plugged in the shopping cart stuff, which felt kind of cool because it was the first non-read-only kind of data that I've been working with that API. So it felt pretty good. And that down the road, I think, you know, it makes it flexible for me. If we have to do a lot of real-time stuff, I can either A, use Action Cable, or B, proxy traffic from a certain endpoint to a different service. And that's totally viable. Crap, now I'm thinking about... I'm not going to do it, Paul. I'm not going to do it. But the thought cropped into my head, I could just proxy certain endpoints and just replace the API endpoint by endpoint. I'm not going to do it, though. But people have done that. I think that's a pretty common thing that happens, you know, as companies grow and they need, for example, if they need like a very specific need for something like that's high concurrency, Rails could probably handle it. But a lot of people might just proxy a certain endpoint out to a different service and handle it that way. So yeah, it's not like when you make a choice, you're chained to it forever. I think that in the beginning, if you make smart decisions on how you actually structure your application and how you build out your database and your tables and stuff, I think it gives you a lot of flexibility down the road. And again, I thought it was really cool that I could start a Phoenix app. I could actually just add one line saying, hey, instead of inserted at, use created at. I was good to go. You know, it just worked.
Pretty nifty.
Oh, but it's there. It's nagging me.
Thanks again to Linode for their continued sponsorship of Does Not Compute. Linode makes it super easy to create and manage virtual SSD servers. You can spin up new boxes in just seconds with your choice of Linux distribution, data center location, and computing power. Check out linode.com/doesnotcompute to learn more. And when you sign up with the promo code DoesNotCompute2017, they'll give you $20 in account credit to get started. Found it.